Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
He is the greatest fighter of all times next to me.
A disputatious boxing fan is one that simply can't come to grasp with the fact your guy lost. Pete Alvarez was a local San Francisco boxing trainer in the 1970s and 80s, and he was probably the most disputatious man in boxing history. Pete would put on these scenes, looking up to God, running over to the boxing commission ringside, all the while screaming his fighter was scandalously robbed. They stole it from us, screamed Pete Alvarez time and time again. The truth of the matter was that his guy, Pete Alvarez's boxer, had been knocked out cold. That, folks, is disputatious. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, a.k.a. WBC TV, as I mentioned in the open. The WBO Super Featherweight Champion, Jamal Herring, stopped Carl Frampton in the fifth round six last night. Of course, that was in Dubai. Caesar's Palace got a place in Dubai. Caesar, listen, I know everybody's going over to Dubai and, like, you know, it's like the hot tourist place. It's only thing hot about Dubai is the weather. It's like 130 degrees in the wintertime. You don't want to go there. You just sweat 24-7. Unless you're Bruce Lee and you've surgically removed your sweat glands, okay, you don't want to go to Dubai. You just don't. There's nothing to go to Dubai. There's nothing there but burkas and hookers. That's it. It's all. I was in Dubai 2 weeks. I was in Dubai for like 14 or 15 days. Nothing but chicks with burkas, women working, wearing masks, okay, and which is sort of cool here in the United States since being the pandemic, that kind of stuff. So they were pre-pandemic with the mask. But outside of that, it was burkas and hookers. That's all there was in Dubai. Gambling, hookers, prostitutes. I mean, come on. It was just like any other sleazy place, except it was in Dubai, and you had to travel to get there. And usually if you travel on Emirates Airlines like I did, you got food poisoning, and your entire 14 days there was absolutely horrid. So the bottom line is I never, ever in my life want to go back to the country of Dubai. Straight up, we'll be talking about Muhammad Ali in depth, of course, on this show today. Of course, the greatest, having passed away a few years ago now. Septus down there in Arizona, that's what took his life. Of course, some people say that he died from boxing-related results. You know, he died from old age. He was 76 years old, and his body went a long way. And it isn't like today where guys are living to their 80s and 80s or 90s and things like that. The bottom line is, you know, Muhammad Ali was in poor health for a long, long time. Anyway, speaking of a guy that's in great health, let's take it to Southern California, Santa Monica, California, and bring in the retired HBO godfather, Mr. Larry Merchant. How are you today, sir?
Good morning, Pedro. I'm doing as well as an old man can expect to do.
Okay, and how's the godmama?
She's doing all right this morning.
That's good. Now, I want to ask you, because last week you sort of touched on it, and, you know, I guess I have to admit this. I've been thrown out of arenas. I've been told by promoters not to show up. I mean, you name it, I've pushed people the wrong way. But I've never been thrown out of a country, and I've been to 34 countries, not been permitted to go back to a country. So can you expand on the reason why they wouldn't let you back in for the Muhammad Ali George Foreman fight in October 1974 into Zaire, Africa, the former Congo?
The fight was postponed because Foreman suffered a cut, I believe, was on his eyelid in training. And the fight wouldn't happen for 6 weeks, so I decided I had to go home. And then a few days before the fight, I went to the airport in all my innocence, hoping to go back to see that fight, and that fight of the century. And when I got to the airport in New York, there were some government, Zairean government officials there, and they informed me that I was not welcome to go back. And then I had to figure out in hindsight what exactly had I done.
Okay.
And I suppose. I had gone there a few weeks early, and I was writing columns, and I was musing about writing a book about the adventure. And so I might have written something to the effect of that the dictatorial government there was giving their citizens a circus, this big fight, instead of bread. That's one of the things that they might not have been happy about. But at the same time, I wrote that I understood that this was a poor country and that they were trying to build their business and their tourism. They had some vast game preserves that had been closed to the world for years, in which they supposedly had some exotic animals not seen elsewhere. And that this was what governments try to do, and Don King went around the world to the Philippines, to Jamaica, and to Africa, selling fights between Americans. And then there was a column, a specific column I wrote, now that I recall, now that I'm babbling. I was in the hotel lobby, and I noticed in a corner of the lobby, a white-haired woman, obviously a Western, probably an American woman, having a sort of animated discussion with Don King. And I looked, and I thought, what's that all about? Well, when King left, I went over to the woman and introduced myself and found out that she was exactly what she looked like, which was a librarian in a high school in Michigan. And she was there with a friend. And she had signed on for a deal to go to a fight. And while she was in Zaire, her and her friend would be flown to one of these game preserves in the eastern part of the country. And she told me that this flight never materialized, that Don King almost expressed total innocence about what was going on. What a surprise. And so I wrote a column about it. Now, I don't know if the government in Zaire took offense at that.
Or Don King.
But I imagine that Don King did. And so maybe that was the source of my being barred from going back.
Well,
there was also I wrote about the fact that Don King had sold the government thousands of beds that it would need for the influx of fight fans and tourists that would come to the fight. And, of course, it turned out that those thousands of tourists didn't show up at all. But it was a great fight.
The Mobutu Mattress Company.
You know, when Don King's, this was the first time that Don King, of course, was his first big event. It was the first time he was able to sell something to the world. And of course, you're right, he brought two American fighters over there. But what he sort of promised them was that this was going to become Las Vegas, Palm Springs or something like that. And then when I was, even as a kid, I didn't think that, you know, there was going to be like Palm Springs and lions in Africa, not in the Congo.
Well, maybe he was thinking of Northern Africa.
But how was he able to pull this off in all these different countries?
Look, I don't know the details, Pedro. Okay. I know that he was able to convince the heads of states in these exotic locations for heavyweight championship fights that the fight and the exposure it gave to the countries would be paid over many, many times by attracting tourists. And they believed him, or they wanted to believe him, and not too many of them invited him back.
You know, I was thinking of President Marcos, of course, the murderer that he was, having snuffed out his Corazon Aquino's husband. And I forget what his first, Nino Aquino, I believe. Anyway, I met Corazon Aquino here, and I was part of her presidential guard here in the mid-1980s when I was with the SFPD. She was a wonderful lady. And when I asked her about President Marcos and boxing and coming to the Philippines and this and that, and she said, although it showed the Philippines on a worldwide stage, it brought nothing economically to the country at all.
Right, but what happened was Manny Pacquiao came to America from the Philippines.
That was 50 years
later. And many years later, of course. And he discovered that there are all those Filipino immigrants in the U.S. Who would wanted to see him and cheer him and so forth. And so he became a star in the U.S., an international star, a Filipino fighter.
Godfather, he's basically still on in the upper echelon of boxing at the age of 41. How come?
Well, because everybody is maneuvering themselves or trying to maneuver themselves into some fabulous fight reward, you know, tens of millions of dollars. And so it puts a freeze on actually getting anything done because they're all trying to manipulate the system and waiting for that magnificent payday that's going to reward their grandchildren.
Good luck with that one. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, of course, coming to you from the Sports Byline Studios in the City by the Bay, San Francisco, California. The Godfather, the retired HBO Godfather, Larry Merchant, is blessing us with his presence. You are tuned to the longest-running fight show in history, celebrating 38 years of radio presence. Straight up, you are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. After the break, more with the Godfather, Larry Merchant.
Oh, I feel nice. A sugar and spice. I feel nice, like sugar and spice. So nice, so nice, I got you.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide is brought to you by the World Boxing Council, the WBC.
Well, you know, it's my theory that if Don King was born rich and white, he'd be Donald Trump. And if Donald Trump was born poor and black, he'd be Don King.
Well, you have to talk to my lawyer on that one. Yow!
So the question is, has Don King ever been in a fight? According to books I've read in high school, he ran the other way anytime a confrontation presented itself. Of course, there was the confrontations with Bob Arum, a couple little scuffles on the ringside, this and that. But December 11, 1981, it was a drama in the Bahamas. Muhammad Ali, of course, his final fight against Trevor Burbick. Ali would lose a 10-round decision there. Don King had nothing to do with it, but the Muslims lumped him up after the show, lumped him up visibly, and he was beaten up. So outside of being beaten up by the Muslims, I don't think Don King's ever been in a fight. Of course, he's been lit up by Mike Tyson. I was on the phone with him one time when a fight broke out, I think, in the car, allegedly. Of course, the driver was Isidore, and his deceased, I can't remember Isidore's other name. Last name, but Isidore was a driver. Evidently, he got out and tried to say something to Mike Tyson and got slapped around for it. So that's basically the only time Don King's ever been in a fight that I know of. Larry, did you witness any Don King fights? Real ones?
No, but Don King was a numbers runner in Cleveland before he imagined himself and broke out as a fight promoter. And, I'm guessing he might have had a fight or two in those days.
You know, he didn't for the most part. I looked up, I read a lot about his Cleveland background, this and he just wasn't a tough guy. What he did was he would beat up guys that were smaller than him. He was a bully. I mean, he was a thug, but he wasn't really a tough guy per se, and he didn't want to put on that tough guy persona unless he had to. And, of course, the guy that he murdered, the second guy he was convicted and went to jail for, I think his last name was Garrett, and the guy said something like, "Don King, don't worry, I'll get you the money." Those were the same as last words, and Don kicked him one more time in the head, and that canceled his ticket.
Mm. Don King is one of those up from the streets characters who had the imagination and the ambition to make something of himself, and he did.
No doubt about that. Now he's a big Trump guy, so we'll go the other way on that one. The current heavyweight division, of course, we've got these guys. They've signed for this two-fight deal, which is a pretty smart move, 50-50. Of course, Tyson Fury undefeated and got that one draw against Deontay Wilder. Of course, he erased that by stopping Wilder. And then you've got in the other corner the guy from the UK, the 2012 Olympic gold medalist, Joshua. Of course, he's once beaten, lost to Ante Luiz, came back and beat Ante Luiz in the rematch. They've signed for two fights. The first fight's at 50-50. The second fight is going to be 60-40 for the 60 for the winner, 40 for the loser. Why can't the welterweights get on that plane, on that same train? And are they just avoiding each other and don't want to? I'm talking about Bud Crawford and Errol Spence. It seems like Crawford seems to be dragging his feet on this one, maybe, in my perspective.
Well, I don't know the story, and I don't know the bucks they're talking about, but it took a long time for the two Brits to get together as well. It took a long time for Mayweather and Pacquiao to get together. And that seems to be the way the business model operates these days.
Interesting. As far as pay-per-view is concerned, the apps have taken over. Showtime's still around. In hindsight, could HBO have still kept stayed competitive to an extent with a fight here and there?
Well, they never said they were going out of the fight world completely. They said they were stopping their fight shows, their programs, and they left a little bit of a loophole there where if something presented itself, they would try to jump in. But as time goes on, you have to be skeptical of whether anybody in that building really can remember the boxing program that helped to make the network.
I
don't know whether they're needed anymore. They've been superseded by promoters who can make their own networks.
Did boxing make HBO home box office? Did boxing make it?
It was one of the things that it broke out for, absolutely, because they were, you know, Sugar Ray Leonard and Marvin Hagler. I was told that Marvin Hagler, when he became a fixture on HBO, that the network sold many, many subscriptions in the New England area where he was from.
Well, of course, the late Marvin having passed away a couple of weeks ago. Natural causes. Being nosy, I was told he was suffering from some form of cancer for about a year, and that's why his wife said it was natural causes, and he went off. But evidently, nobody really knows, and may God rest his soul. And I will say this, I'll say it again. There are not too many. Joe Frazier was mentally tough. He was one of the most mentally tough men I've ever seen in my life, especially that first Ali Frazier fight. But the mental strength of Marvin Hagler was unparalleled.
Well, it inhabited a very strong body, and with a guy who knew how to box and fight and could take a punch.
Yeah, and he kept that persona all the way to the end. I mean, he was clean. And when I say clean, I mean, you didn't see any police blotters or anything. There's no scandals, this and that. I mean, when he divorced his first wife, it wasn't in the papers, things like that. I mean, Marvin was a little bit different. He was a unique athlete.
Well, he was, in boxing, he was a straight arrow.
As straight as they come. And of course, he stuck with his team. Goody and Pat Petronelli, I thought, was against his best interest, but he stuck with them all the way into the end. And I guess loyalty does pay off, but bottom line was those guys didn't do enough in that Leonard fight. They should have stuck a needle in his ass. Had they stuck a needle in his ass, I think that he would have won that fight. Because it was close, Larry. It was close.
Define what needle in his ass means.
Get off the gig. Go get him. Go wreck him. Go do what you did to Tommy Hearns. Go crazy.
Well, as I think I've said on your show in the past, Marvin went into the fight with the mindset that he could show the world that he could outbox a great boxer. That was his decision.
Well, the bottom line is it was a bad decision. Of course, he lost a split decision. The judge that voted for Marvin Hagler, he and I traveled around the world together, went to China once or twice. Lou Filippo, may he rest in peace. But he stuck to that 7-5 decision no matter what. Godfather, I want to wish you the happiest of Holy Weeks. I don't know how religious you are, but have a happy Easter to you and the Godmama and give her the best. And as I say each week, I thank you so much for your time as I feel blessed because, you know, not too many shows. I don't think anybody's got you weekly. And I feel gifted. I feel blessed.
Well, thank you and happy Easter to you and all your listeners.
The retired HBO Godfather, Mr. Larry Merchant, a.k.a. Mr. Patricia Stitch Merchant. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live World. Did I get that right? I blew it again. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
At Atlanta, Georgia. Raleigh, North Carolina.